fields of bodies burning as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news.
And I'm Dan Dugan, the other guy on the other side. WGRN, the Green Renaissance.
Hi, this is Bob Petrakis bringing you the other side of the news on 94.1 FM, the Green Renaissance. In the studio with me, the other guy.
Dan Dugan here, the other guy on the other side. Glad to be during the winter.
We're here with Connie Goodell Newton, a local attorney, and for the record, my law partner, and actually the former co-host of this show while back, and a candidate for governor on the Green Party ticket. But she's not here to talk, unless we get to it later, any of those issues other than what she witnessed as an attorney. An eyewitness yesterday in the Franklin County courts.
Yeah, Bob, thanks. It is great to be back on your show. It was a lot of fun co-hosting, and it's nice to be back as a guest. So yesterday I was at juvenile court. I'm an attorney and guardian litem in the juvenile court in Franklin County, and there was a police shooting yesterday at juvenile court involving a teenager.
Okay, and this was done by a deputy sheriff. Was it a deputy sheriff who supplies security to the courts?
Yes, Bob, it was. I was sitting there waiting with my client, getting ready to go into the courtroom, and it was about 12:30 in the afternoon, so we had all been waiting since about 9 in the morning. And I saw this young man go into the courtroom.
Is that common, right? You have this cattle call at 9 o'clock? And you don't get there sometimes for hours?
Yeah, unfortunately, it is very common. So a lot of people come and are present at juvenile court. There are usually hundreds of people who come in and out of juvenile court every day, including probation officers, prosecutors, defense attorneys, guardians, parents, kids. There are a lot of people there every day. And it does typically take a while to work through the docket, and the docket tends to get backed up. So we were still there waiting for our case after 12 o'clock.
And what did you notice about this incident? I don't recall ever witnessing a shooting at court before, particularly that of a juvenile.
You're right, Bob. It was very tragic. So what I saw was that the young man came out of the courtroom after he was done with his court hearing. He was visibly upset about something that had been said to him or something that had happened in the courtroom or as he was leaving the courtroom. And it turned a verbal altercation with a police officer turned into a physical altercation. And it was just seconds before I heard his mother saying that he had been shot by the police officer, by the sheriff's deputy.
Now, could you make out anything that was said, any of the verbal exchange between this juvenile and the deputy sheriff?
Yes. What happened is that there was a lawyer an attorney who exited the courtroom after the young man mm-hmm. and said something like, "Be careful or you'll go to jail," or "Change your ways or you'll go to jail." And so the young man didn't know who had made that comment to him and believed it was the police officer who said no, that it wasn't him.
So in your mind, it's clear the remark was made by a private attorney and not the deputy sheriff?
It appeared to be made by an attorney, yeah.
The report I heard said that he had been, he was upset about something either said to his mother or perhaps that the officer put a hand on his mother. Is that?
I do believe that the police officer got physical with his mother. And what I saw was that the young man was there with his whole family. They were all there to support him that day. It was his mother.
And that's positive from your perspective, right? His whole family's there supporting him?
Yes. You know, a lot of times families are very fearful to come to court at all because they could be separated. He could be sent to detention or removed from the home. And so there's a lot of anxiety that comes with going to court. And so it's absolutely really positive when a kid's family is there. And unfortunately, I've represented children whose parents didn't even want them anymore. So the fact that his family wanted him and he was clearly loved by his family, regardless of whatever was going on, it just makes it all that much more tragic that his whole family was there. Amen. To support him. Mm-hmm. in being at court as he had to go through that. And his mother was there, his grandmother was there. It looked like he had a younger brother who was about 8 to 10 years old who witnessed this. And so as the fight was breaking out, it seemed to get physical between the police officer and the young man's mother. I don't know if at that point the young man got involved somehow, but things got very loud and chaotic. And I saw the younger brother terrified in the seats as he was watching what happened. And then seconds later, there was a gunshot, and the mother started screaming that her son had been shot.
Yeah, I heard her on your tape, which, you know, I saw saying, "You shot my baby." I mean, really,
right.
It was a shocking video. And what did you see, the exchange between the mother and the deputy sheriff? Is it clear in your mind if you saw any specifics?
Well, that part of the incident happened as they exited the courtroom and went around the corner to a short hallway, and that's where everything happened. They were kind of cornered back in a hallway, and there were a lot of people there. It was difficult to tell what was going on, but there was definitely something physical going on, and it seemed that the mother was and the sheriff were involved with that.
How long after the incident did you begin to shoot? And I must admit, you know, the video, shot's poor choice of words, but shooting the video, not anything else. How long before you began to capture the video there?
Yeah, as soon as I realized that there was an altercation breaking out between a child and a police officer, I started to try to get my phone out so that I could record whatever was about to happen. And it took me a few seconds to be able to do that. I believe that my video recording starts just seconds after the young man was shot. And in the video, you can see him lying face down with his head facing the door. From that short hallway, it goes back behind the courtrooms. And he was down on the ground, face down from what I could see. And the mother started yelling and getting hysterical, like, "You shot my son, he shot my son." And then security officers tried to move her to the side and get her away from the scene, when clearly all she would have wanted at that point would be to comfort her son. And I don't believe that she even got to be near her son as he was taking his final breaths, that she was taken away. And she was clearly, from the video, very fearful as a police officer or detective, somebody from the court, was trying to move her into a conference room. And also, she clung to her younger child, saying, "Don't take my baby. Don't get away from me. Get away from my baby." So it was heart-wrenching to see just the emotional impact that it had on everybody, and then just the implications that somebody was shot in my workplace. As a guardian and defense attorney, I basically get up and go to work every day to protect children, to advocate for what's in their best interest, to protect parents' constitutional rights to parent their children. And so it's just that much more disturbing and upsetting that this could happen at juvenile court, where we're all there trying to work for children and to keep them safe.
So you had your phone out because you thought what was happening should be recorded for factual reasons because there was an altercation going on that concerned you?
Yes. It did concern me from the beginning, and I did not know what the outcome was going to be. I did not know that it was going to lead to the child being shot at that point, but it just seemed like it appeared that the police officer was getting involved in the situation where there was a kid who was upset after leaving the courtroom. And he did not try to use any de-escalation tactics. This whole incident happened very quickly. Words were not used to de-escalate the situation nonviolently. And it appeared that it was the type of situation where the deputy did not need to insert himself into that situation because
that's a major point. You're saying that the deputy didn't need to be involved in the situation. Now you got a juvenile that's dead. Why do you make that argument? I think it's a very important argument.
Yeah, Bob. Well, I'm in juvenile court a lot, and I see people come and go, and I see people come out of the courtroom often upset about having their children taken away from them or some other situation. And so it's fairly normal for people to be upset as they leave the courtroom. And sometimes we even get people who are loud, who are disruptive, and generally those people are able to be escorted out nonviolently. And I think that should always be the goal, is preventing the loss of life and using nonviolent communication and de-escalation tactics to try to control the situation. Because this was clearly a child, a minor, and everybody is screened when they come in the door. So the likelihood that he would have had any weapons on him was very, very low because we're all screened for weapons.
Absolutely.
When we come in the door. So it would have been very unlikely that he would have had a gun or a knife or used any weapon other than just his body to harm somebody. So it's very tragic what happened, and I think that it's very traumatizing to everybody who witnessed it. There were parents who were there with their children. My client was also a teenager who was there, and you know, this is something that's happening more and more in our society, and we're seeing it every week as a new police shooting. So this hit really close to home.
So your client already has some concerns, is in court, and now he's got to be an eyewitness to a homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would scare a kid. But again, I was going to just interject that the NPR, was a local affiliate, NPR, did a report on it, and his aunt, who I don't believe was there, said that her understanding was the police officer put a hand on the mother, and that's when the boy reacted.
I would absolutely believe that. There was a lot going on. It was very chaotic, and I don't exactly have a clear memory of that part of it. But I do know that the mother was quite upset as well on behalf of her son,
right.
And that basically this happened potentially because there was. Because of how they were dealt with, that maybe they felt they were not being treated fairly, and that often happens, that people get upset because they're confused about what the court process is, or they feel like they're, you know, being talked down to or disrespected.
Well, you're an attorney, and words are important, so you said the officer didn't use any de-escalation tactics. Now, what about one step further? Did the presence of the officer in any way perhaps escalate the situation? This is WGRN 94.1, The Green Renaissance. I'm Bob Fetrakis in the studio with Connie Goodell Newton, an eyewitness to the shooting of the juvenile in the Franklin County court system, and the other guy.
The other guy's still here. And the other thing I heard was a report from a police officer who said that he thought that the officer might have been his life might have been endangered.
For
a 14-year-old kid.
And you know, I think that the officer had a choice whether to insert himself into that situation or not, and that The young man was with his family. Yes, people were upset, but people often need just a few minutes when they exit the courtroom to calm down
and take
space. A deep breath.
Yep.
Yeah, give them a little space.
Decompress.
And so to answer your question, Bob, yeah, I do think that the presence of the police officer could have aggravated that situation because people are often on edge just with the power that police officers have in our society to do exactly what he did. He took a life. And he will probably, unfortunately, get away with it, just as so many other police officers have gotten away with it with no consequences, even when the victim was clearly innocent.
Well, let me take another step. You're running for governor. If we've got a problem with police officers shooting people, sometimes escalating rather than de-escalation, do you have a policy to deal with that?
Yeah, Bob, I think that a lot of this can be addressed through training. And what I would like to see is better training of officers in nonviolent de-escalation tactics, including nonviolent communication and hostage negotiation tactics that are intended to prevent the loss of life. I think that always needs to be the goal, to prevent the loss of life. And that is possible with training. Right now, police officers are being trained to think of our neighborhoods as a war zone.
Correct.
And what I'd like to say to them is my neighborhood is not a war zone. It's a community, and we have community members who love and respect each other. We have families here. And if your mentality is that this is a war zone, then you don't need to be here. Finally, I think that it is important that police officers who do have a very difficult job receive screening and treatment for PTSD. If a police officer has been traumatized by something that's happened on the job, then he or she needs to receive some kind of counseling or treatment to deal with that trauma so that they do not become a danger to the public.
Now, you've been to juvenile court. You work there, it's your workplace, so to speak. As you've mentioned, you realize that your clients, other clients, need some space after they're coming out of a heavily tense situation. Is there any way the deputy sheriff wouldn't have known that? Is that, you know, why get caught up in that? Does it make any sense whatsoever that you're going to get caught up with people that are highly emotional and distraught?
I think it's a matter of the tools that the police officers and other professionals have at their disposal to use. So in this case, the tool that he had to use was a lethal weapon. But there are nurses who deal with mentally ill patients all the time,
mm-hmm.
people who are sometimes violent and who will try to strike you. And frankly, Bob, I would have preferred to break up this fight and take a punch to the face rather than have this child die right in our hallway outside
of
court. I would have been happy to try to de-escalate that situation, and I was about to stand up to comfort the little brother as he was seeing this altercation break out. I did not know at that time that it was going to be a lethal confrontation, but I certainly could recognize when somebody was upset as they're walking out of the courtroom. It was clear to anybody. And I think sometimes all it takes is a person with a clear head and some kindness in their heart to talk to that person and tell them, it's okay, just calm down, you guys are done today, it's okay, you're going to go ahead on out of here, here's what you do next, you know, go on downstairs, you guys can have lunch. And I think that there are a lot of ways that those situations can be de-escalated. And, you know, when you have mentally ill patients, you don't see doctors, you don't see nurses shooting their patients when they start to have a behavioral issue. But if somebody calls because their family member is having a mental health crisis, you'd expect a police officer to know how to arrive on the scene and de-escalate that situation with a mentally ill person. Sometimes they might have a knife and be threatening to kill themselves or harm themselves. And what we've seen recently is the police officers are just shooting them in front of their family instead of trying to get that person some treatment or help. That's why I think that we need the hostage negotiation training so that a police officer can come assess the situation, take a moment to assess the safety of the situation and what can be done to prevent the loss of life. Also, police officers are trained when there's a threat to shoot at the body mass until the threat is eliminated. So I think that we need to equip our police officers with less lethal devices that can help restrain a person who's out of control in a way that's not going to cause long-term harm to them. For all I care, shoot a net and throw a net over them if that's, you know, what it takes. But there are other options besides lethal, deadly force.
Yeah, that seems to make sense to me. And that's what I can't understand is why so often it leads to a person being killed and lethal force being used when you would think they would be trained to control the situation, not escalate it. But that's horrible.
Now, did you see the juvenile who was shot?
Yes, I saw him as he was exiting the courtroom, and then I saw them as they wheeled him out on the gurney.
Because a lot of times they'll present these people as menacing and threatening. You were there. Did you feel scared? Did you feel menaced by them?
I did see him. I would not have felt threatened by him. I can recognize when somebody's angry, but that's not necessarily, you know, anger that is directed at me. So no, I was not fearful of this young man. I was scared for him because I know what can happen when somebody is upset and they don't know how to handle their emotions. So to me, he struck me as somebody who was very young, probably had much less maturity than adults in that situation would have. And I think that you really need to take the maturity level of the juvenile mm-hmm. into account, and that we need to account for that and protect those children, and with an understanding that yes, sometimes kids get angry. He was kind of a tall and skinny kid. He did not seem hugely menacing, and if he was really a threat, I mean I believe that they would have kept him in detention. They had mm-hmm. they had the option of, you know, he could have left out the back door instead of the front door of the courtroom if he was really a threat.
Yeah.
So correct me if I'm wrong. He was going home. Was he going to be on a monitor? I mean, he wasn't such a threat that they were going to keep him in jail or the workhouse or detain him in a jail or prison.
Bob, I don't know the details of his case, but what I could observe is that he did have an ankle monitor box with him, so it appeared that they would be releasing him to his family, whether that was with an ankle monitor or going down to probation to get the monitor mm-hmm. taken off. I don't know what his situation was, but if he was going to be incarcerated that day, he would have left out the back door,
okay.
not the front door. So it really did appear that he was done with court and he was going to be going home with his family. And unfortunately, yeah. he did not go home with his family. He didn't come out alive.
Do we know in any way whether the police officer intentionally shot him in center mass in his torso?
I don't know. What I could observe is that it looked like the young man was already on the ground face down when this happened. And there was just one
When he was shot?
When he was shot. And so my feeling is maybe the police officer was trying to get him down to the ground at that point. And there was one single shot. I believe it was to the torso. And so I would only assume that that could happen intentionally, Bob.
So it's your belief, I don't want to say testimony because you're not under oath, but you believe he was already on the ground when the shot was fired or close to the ground or being taken down?
I believe so. He was at the end of that hall, and it appeared that, you know, later in the video, you do see that he was face down. I believe he was already down on the ground when he was shot, probably at point-blank range.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Okay. Well, we have a few minutes left to wrap up. Any things you'd like to say as a candidate? I mean, there's a prison industrial complex out there. This is pretty routine, right? These juveniles are being run in and out of these courts every day. there's probably not enough resources, our society doesn't give much of a future. How do we deal with this problem in general?
Bob, as a governor candidate, I have a lot of experience with juvenile justice issues, mm-hmm. and I've been working on these issues as an attorney and an activist for many years. We need to shut down the school-to-prison pipeline. Right now, people are running through the juvenile court system, and any contact they have with the juvenile court system makes it more likely that they'll be an offender as an adult. So this is an issue that I care about and I've worked on for many years as an activist and as an attorney, and this week it hit really close to home. So as I'm running for governor, I want to speak out about these issues, and I'm also committed to advocating for children, ending the prison industrial complex, shutting down privatized prisons, and stopping in its tracks the school-to-prison pipeline.
Amen. Yeah.
Also, I just wanted to express my condolences to the family in this incident. It is a very tragic thing that happened to your family and to my at my workplace yesterday. It was absolutely heart-wrenching to see the family witness the death and killing of their loved one. It was absolutely heart-wrenching to know that that 8-year-old little boy came into court that day with his brother and left without him, and that mother left without her son. This is something that happens and has a ripple effect in our society. I know that the staff of the court were visibly upset and shaken about this. The attorneys who had to witness it, the other children and families and parents who had to witness this violence has ripple effects throughout our society. It doesn't just affect the family that this happened to, but it really impacts all of us. And it just goes to show, that we have an issue here, a problem with government actors treating Ohio citizens as if they are the enemy. And mm-hmm. You know, this can happen to anybody. It was so fast. And just like that, in an instant, a whole family's dreams were shaken and their whole life has changed. And so I just want to express my sincerest regrets and condolences to the family. And I certainly know that a lot of people wish that something could have happened differently that day to prevent it. And I really hope that my activism and that my run for governor somehow affects this situation for others so that other families don't have to go through what you've gone through.
Connie Goodell Newton, eyewitness to a homicide in the halls of justice. And what ultimately bothers me, Connie, so much is you like to think the courts are about dispensing justice, and then out in the hall, someone was executed without any probable cause, when there could have been other ways to de-escalate and solve the problem.
Right, Bob. This type of extrajudicial killing is totally unacceptable, and it's something that we need to address in our society.
Absolutely. All right, that's Connie Goodell Newton. Any thoughts on this, Mr. Duke?
Just thanks, Connie, and everybody be safe out there, okay? Let's make it through this winter. Okay.
And again, how can people find out about your campaign for governor?
They can check us out on Facebook. We also have a Twitter page, and our website is recently updated with new information about our platform and our candidates. My running mate is Brett Joseph, and our website is www.constanceforohio.org. Check it out if you'd like to volunteer, see what our issues are, make a donation. We don't accept any corporate donations. We represent the people only.
All right, yep. This is The Other Side of the News. Thanks, Connie, and thanks, Dan.
Go green.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Bob Fitrakis.
And Dan Dugan, WGRN 94.1 LPFM, The Green Renaissance.